Samuel L.
Hamburgers.
Is your website purdy?
The cornerstone of any nutritious breakfast.
Does it work right?
This is a tasty burger.
Can people find it?
You mind if I have some of your tasty beverage to wash this down?
Say it!
Man, you been.
If you answered no, or kinda, to any of these questions, you came to the right podcast. Because we're going to help you mind your business. Here's your host, the lexical cognizant and SEO director guy of Mind Development and Design, Mark Boyd.
Welcome to the Mind Your Business podcast presented by the Minds at Mind Development and Design. Thank you for listening through whatever vehicle of your choice, right off our website at welcometomind.com, on Stitcher, on iTunes, coming soon to Google Play as well. Thank you for following us on Pinterest and on Facebook. As always, if you have a burning question regarding website design, function, development, search engine optimization, social media, blogging, whatever, please send your questions our way through our website or social media, and we'll address them right here on this podcast. We love getting questions from you. Now, as most of you know, I draw a lot of inspiration from music and from some of the classic pro football teams. I'm a sucker for documentaries on my favorite rock bands and on my favorite football teams. The great philosopher Rod Stewart once sang, "Every picture tells a story." And indeed it does. And there's usually an interesting story behind any rock band that has experienced enduring success. Some of the stories are tragic. Some of them are really inspirational. None has had a greater impact on me than the story of Rush. Even the story of Clutch has to be second place to the story of Rush here. And that's hard for me to say because Clutch is my favorite band. But with regard to Rush, even if you're not a fan, I guarantee that you'll be inspired by this episode. And if you are a fan and you have not seen the Rush documentary Beyond the Lighted Stage, I highly recommend you do, because that's one of those documentaries where even if you're a fan, you're only going to be a bigger fan. And if you're not a fan, it may not make you a fan, but it may make you respect them. It'll probably make you respect them like you never did before. Some amazing stuff in the story of how that band became successful. And even if you're not a fan of Rush, I guarantee you'll be inspired by this episode of the Mind Your Business podcast. I felt it was a good time to address Rush because unfortunately the effects of aging are finally catching up with these guys and their active career is winding down. They announced a little earlier this year that they were retiring from large-scale touring. And one of the big reasons is that their much revered drummer, and rightfully revered, Neil Peart, has been experiencing increasingly debilitating tendonitis. And I know Alex Lifeson, the guitar player, has had some health issues too, I think with arthritis. But hey, these things happen as we get older. And with the case of Neil Peart, it's a repetitive motion-oriented injury and simply comes with the territory when you're not 25 years old anymore, or you're not 35 years old anymore, or even 45 years old anymore. I mean, hey, these guys have been together for over 40 years, and they've overcome a lot to achieve their success. As with other artists that we've discussed here, like Lemmy, David Bowie, and the ultimate DIY band, Clutch, there's a lot that we can learn from Rush to inspire us and make us better in our business, make the core of our business better, especially from the landmark album 2112, which, by the way, was released 40 years ago this month. Maybe a little ironically, the album was released on April Fool's Day, April 1st, 1976. Now, whether this was the band's decision or the record label's decision, it's kind of funny either way, considering what ultimately happened. Now, the reason I single out Rush's 2112 album is because it was such a huge risk for them. And when you start any kind of business, you're taking a risk. You're taking a risk because this is the business. This is what you want to do. This is how you want to do business. This is the kind of business you want to do. And you're willing to risk your livelihood to make it happen. And in Rush's case, they risked losing everything they had worked for when they came up with the 2112 album, because the record company was pressuring them to write more singles. And in response to the record company pressuring them to write more singles, they responded with 2112, an album whose side one, remember albums? Side one is a 20-minute conceptual suite. Now, bear in mind that while it is highly revered now, it was basically considered career suicide at the time. So we're going to highlight three ways that this 2112 album and the story can teach us things that will make our businesses better and stronger for the long haul. We'll start first with a recurring subject on our podcast, who are you? Really, who are you and how much does your identity mean to you? This was a major factor in the story of 2112. See, Rush started out as a power trio. I mean, they always have been, but they started out as like a really traditional power trio, guitar, bass, and drums, kind of in the mold of bands like Cream. And they recorded their self-titled first album, which was released in early 1974 on the independent Moon Records label out of Canada. Now, they released it independently because they couldn't get a record deal, and their manager just decided to record, release, and promote it on their own. A song called Working Man from the album made the playlist at a Cleveland radio station initially because it was 7 minutes long, which was enough time for the DJ to go to the bathroom and get back to start the next record. I remember this from my old DJ days because, there was The End by The Doors, there was American Pie, and there were several other songs those songs actually were never put on the playlist because those were the songs where if you really had to go to the bathroom, I know that's TMI, but if you had to go to the bathroom, that song would give you plenty of time. You wouldn't have to be rushing around for a 3-minute song. And it used to become a joke amongst all the DJs because when we'd be listening, riding around in the car and listening to our station, whenever we heard one of those songs, we knew what was going on. So anyway, that's how it first came to their attention, to the attention of the radio station. They got the album and they checked out the longest cut on the album to see if it could be one of those songs. And it also happened, though, that in the case of Working Man, the lyrics of the song connected with the blue-collar factory lifestyle and work ethic associated with Cleveland at the time, which only served to increase its popularity. The radio station started getting calls like crazy, asking them when the new Led Zeppelin album was coming out because of the similarity of the sound to Zeppelin. Long story short, this surge in popularity in Cleveland helped Rush attract the interest of Mercury Records, who signed them and basically wanted to groom them to be a Bad Company kind of band. That's not what Rush had in mind. They brought in a new drummer, Neil Peart, who not only was an incredible drummer, but also was constantly reading books, very, very well-read individual, and started writing lyrics. And these lyrics were taking the band in a more progressive rock direction, much to the dismay of the record label, who wanted them to make more hit singles. So by the time their third album came out, Caress of Steel, which was released in 1975, it was not well received by the press, the fans, or the record label. And in fact, the tour was so unsuccessful that the band and their crew referred to it as the Down the Tubes tour because they were sure that they were going to get dropped by their record label. But they personally loved the direction they were going with their music, and they were committed to it no matter what. And this would be tested. This is why we have this episode here today. Because this brings us to right back to who are you and how much does your company identity really mean to you. In the case of Rush, they knew that they didn't want to be Bad Company. They were listening to Genesis and Yes, and they wanted to do something progressive like that, but with a harder edge. After the aforementioned unsuccessful tour, the Down the Tubes tour, the record label pressured Rush and their management to come up with hit singles and something that they felt was more marketable, that they viewed as being more marketable. And this was 1976. You know, this was before the internet age, long before the internet age. So record bands had to succumb to the record label if they wanted to keep their recording contracts. So the record label wanted something more marketable the next time around, and this next album was going to be Rush's Make or Break album. They decided that they were going to be themselves, no matter how weird others might think they are, and were going to make the album they wanted to make, basically deciding together that if they were going down, they were going down fighting. This meant that if they failed, drummer Neil Peart would go back to selling tractor parts at his father's farm equipment shop. Bassist and vocalist Geddy Lee would have to figure something out because he dropped out of high school to be a pro musician. And then Alex Lifeson, the guitarist, would go back and be a plumber's helper for his dad. That's what was going to happen if this next album was not successful. This kind of brings the point home that Rush was very much like the guys next door who happened to make it big. Very blue-collar upbringing, which really helped them achieve success on their own terms and protect their personal identity, because while they were trying to do something progressive, because of their blue-collar ethic, they were able to communicate on a much wider scale than, say, a band like Yes, who really went off the deep end with some of their albums and still, I mean, maintained a healthy fan base, but their reach was very different. Rush was reaching all of us everyday Joes. So anyway, when Rush delivered the master tapes of 2112 to Mercury Records for release, the label reps basically said, "We're screwed. This is not what we asked for. We're screwed." And nothing much was expected to happen, but they had the album and they released it. And what happened was that Rush's message of individual thought versus the status quo, which is what 2112 is all about, that message of individual thought versus the status quo resonated with the masses, and it resulted in their best sales and their first gold record. Alex Lifeson stated that after that success, after 2112 was the big success that it was, the record label never again had a say in their creative process, from the music to the packaging. They recorded each album, delivered it to the label with all the packaging ready for release, and no questions were asked. 2112 became their declaration of independence because they risked losing it all. They won and kind of proved to the record label that they were onto something that the label itself didn't quite understand. Who are you? What is your business's identity? That's the common thread. The identity is the common thread throughout all of Rush's music, and that's the question that this story poses to us. The power of individual thought. Are you confident enough in your own business identity and core principles to stand in the face of detractors like this? If you're not, you really need to take a hard look at your identity, because you can't have a strong identity if you're not strong enough to back it up. Your heart has to be there, and that's another recurring theme on our podcast. Your heart has to be in it. If it's not, then you wind up being a chameleon, and that's no way to create a business identity. Confidence in your own brand results in others being confident in your brand. Now, the second lesson we can learn from 2112, handling criticism and adversity with grace under pressure. This is the kind of thing that can separate a truly lasting business from a fly-by-night organization. If the aforementioned story of risk involved with the making of 2112, if that doesn't inspire you, how about adding to that the record label and management issues? You know, the uncertainty there. How about adding to that the fun that so many rock music critics were having by poking fun and outright insulting bassist and vocalist Geddy Lee's voice in their album reviews and concert reviews? It had to be agonizing to read this stuff back in the day. You know, with his high-pitched screech, which, I mean, it was an acquired taste. As much of a Rush fan as I am, it took me a while to get used to it. I mean, it was described in by critics. They described it as sounding like, quote, a gerbil being tortured, or, quote, an animal in need of being put out of its misery, or, quote, a dog whistle gone psychotic, among other witticisms. And bear in mind, too, I mean, it's funny to read about it. And what's even cooler is how the band handled it. They just let it roll off their shoulders and kept doing their thing. And you're probably laughing at those things right now. But I'm going to turn this around. These were criticisms by so-called experts who had their musings published in magazines and papers that went out to the masses on a huge scale. Hundreds of thousands, if not millions. Imagine your business being written about like that. And you have no way of responding other than just to go out there, you know, in Rush's case, go out there every night and play your best for the people who came out to see you and handle yourself with grace under pressure in the interviews. This can happen to you today with online reviews. And many of you are still frightened by the prospect of a bad review and wonder if you should respond to it or if you should try to have it removed. Once upon a time, you couldn't even respond to such criticism. Keep that in mind. Keep this story in mind. Every time you think that you want to try to remove or not respond to a negative review, just remember, once upon a time, there was nothing you could do about it. You couldn't even really respond to it. How you handle it means everything. No matter how hard you try, somebody somewhere isn't going to be happy with you. Respond to negative reviews by taking the high road. Just be yourself and focus on doing your best. As with 2112, your purity of purpose will overcome any adversity. Now, thirdly, what we can learn from 2112 is the importance of progressing and getting better for your audience, for your customers. We've seen in this age of a franchise business, a good franchise has to progress. An independent business, you definitely have to progress. Because look at the competition you have out there, from whether it's with other independent businesses or franchises, people with larger marketing budgets than you have, etc. How are you progressing and getting better for your audience, for your customers? Rush started off as a bad company, Led Zeppelin sound-alike kind of band. But that's not ultimately what they felt would be satisfying to them as they progressed. They wanted to do something more and, as it turns out, something that had never been quite done before. 2112 was where that ambition first truly came to fruition and reached beyond their initial audience, which was the kind of bad company Led Zeppelin audience. It's interesting to point out, too, they somehow managed to not completely lose that audience over time. But that, again, goes back to confidence in your brand and that confidence coming through. 2112 set a standard that would follow the band for the rest of their career as they incorporated the sounds of the times into the Rush sound. I mean, you had the 70s with that progressive era with 2112 leading up to the album that most everybody is familiar with, Rush's biggest selling album, Moving Pictures, the one with Tom Sawyer on it from 1981. In the 80s, they started incorporating synthesizers, keyboards, exotic rhythms, a lot of the new wave kind of stuff. And then in the 90s, they started incorporating grunge, electronics, and even some dance elements, you know, culminating in finally the modern rock sound of the past 15 years, which most of us longtime Rush fans we welcomed a return to that. But we also appreciate the risk that they took in venturing out and incorporating these other sounds. You know, their success didn't just happen. It took risk. Progress takes risk. Hardcore Rush fans like myself, look at some of those 1980s keyboard heavy albums and some of the 90s stuff like Roll the Bones. We kind of cringe, but we still love the band because that was part of the journey. Even if you didn't like a particular Rush album or particular era of their sound, you could never say that they just weren't trying. That was never an issue or a thought. Because Rush, starting with 2112, showed heart and a willingness to take chances because they believed so steadfastly in what they were doing, because they were being honest with their music. And they were putting everything they had into it and always trying to be better musicians. Hell, after their Counterparts tour, before they recorded Test for Echo, I believe that was in 1997, Neil Peart, who was regarded as arguably the greatest rock drummer ever, he started taking lessons from Freddie Gruber, who is a renowned jazz drummer. He's now deceased, but he was just really a well-known jazz drummer. Neil Peart was always looking to be better. And a lot of his fans couldn't even believe it. It was like, what do you mean be better? But Neil Peart got so good working with sequencers and working with click tracks, like in concert. He got so precise with his sound that he started to get dissatisfied with his sound because he felt that he was losing the heart of his playing and was getting too robotic. So he went and learned from this jazz drummer, basically relearned the drums again. That's the kind of effort. That's the kind of care. That's the purity of purpose. When you hear me talk about purity of purpose, there's great example of it. Always trying to be better. Rush were called nerds, unfashionable, garbage, pretentious, and whatever else. But their individual thought prevailed against the status quo, the masses. That's what their iconic Starman logo represents. The naked man shielding his eyes from the red star. The purity of individual thought rejecting mere peer pressure. Thank you for tuning into this week's Mind Your Business podcast presented by the Minds at Mind Development and Design. Thank you for listening off of our website on Stitcher, iTunes, soon on Google Play. I promise. We're just waiting on Google. Thanks for following us on Pinterest and on Facebook, and we'll see you next time.
From the Minds at Mind Development and Design, thank you for joining us today. Until next week, make sure you mind your business.
Oh, you were finished. Well, allow me to retort.